You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. I'm your host, Safia Kazi, and in this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to be speaking with Frank Downs and Dustin Brewer. Frank is Senior Director of Cybersecurity Advisory and Assessment Solutions at Isaka, and Dustin is Isaka's Principal Futurist. In this episode, we're talking about COVID-19 and how it has affected the way that organizations operate and the security implications of some of those changes. So to begin, Frank, what are some of the impacts that COVID-19 has had on the way that people work?
So Dustin and I were discussing things earlier today, and we were talking about how the way COVID has kind of impacted not just, you know, how people go about their days, but like the workspace and organizations as well. Mm-hmm. And there's been like a lot of ups and downs in this whole experience, specifically where organizations, whether they wanted to or not, have had to realize that remote work has to be an option if you want to stay in business.
Yep.
Right. Now, there's a lot of situations where you can't really do remote work pizzerias, right? So it doesn't apply to everything. But with a lot of information systems organizations, with a lot of financial organizations, and with a lot of interconnected organizations that do business online, there's kind of been, and Dustin, I'd really like you to share your perspective on this too. There's kind of been this mentality of remote work is not like the real work kind of thing. And that remote workers, my favorite's always been that whole mentality of, you know, you can't have people work from home. Yahoo did a big push for it in 2013, where they pretty much said everyone has to come work at the office or find somewhere else, because they had this huge remote workforce. And we see how that really changed Yahoo and made it a much better company, right? Is that working out for you, right? But what's interesting is that stigma can really persist. And the stigma of, you know, well, people who work from home aren't going to work from home as well, or people who telecommute are not going to produce the results as much. And there's a couple different things we've identified in this, right? One, not really. And for right. those of us who work remotely, we've kind of realized that I probably get more done every day in half a day than I did in like a day or two at the office, simply because there's so many less distractions. And by distractions, I mean people, right? You don't have anyone coming up to your desk and just discussing for 45 minutes how their evening went, not even their weekend, but like their evening and stuff like that. And then all the communication you have becomes much more intentional, much more purposeful, right? Meetings become, now meetings, there's always the memes for meetings and so forth that happen with remote working and so forth. And was I on mute? Can you hear me? Stuff like that, right? But people get down to the point a bit quicker. And having the ability to turn on a webcam has really changed the game too. Like, I am probably closer to Dustin in my day to day now than I was during half the places we worked where we worked together.
Yeah, agreed.
It's really been kind of revelatory for a lot of companies and organizations, because they've had to come to grips with, well, you know what? Remote work does work, at least in some capacity, right? And what's interesting there is it's not just that they're realizing that it works, but there are a lot more considerations that have to be made. There's a lot more concerns as to, well, how do we keep everything secure? Because you have all these different variables now. We were talking a little bit earlier about the variables that kind of come into play with, well, not everyone has the same system at their house. Not everyone connects to the internet in the same way. Not everyone uses approved systems in approved manners. And do we even have a BYOD policy? These are all things that kind of come into play that people or organizations are really having to figure out at this point. What do you think, Dustin?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to kick this whole thing off, Frank, I think you just came up with the million, maybe even billion dollar idea of a somehow remote working pizzeria.
That's it. I think you're right.
I think that's our idea. That's how we're going to do it.
Yep. We're going to make internet pizza.
We're going to make internet pizza. Oh, Lord. Okay. Yeah, no, absolutely. And the really amazing thing I think that we're finding now is that as human beings, we've created this virtual world, right? And some of us, I actually looked up these statistics earlier this week, and I can't remember. I think it's somewhere between 20% to 30%, I think, of people work at home at least part-time. And the internet has enabled us to do that, right? And thank goodness, because now we're in a place where we've moved a lot more than 20 to 30% of the workforce into a virtual environment, right? But we have this virtual environment to move into. Now, of course, there are going to be issues with that, right? We're seeing all kinds of things. We've had these collaboration utilities for years. We've had these platforms. We've had Zoom. We've had Teams. We've had Jira or whatever it is you use in order to collaborate online. And everybody's going through this enormous crash course in it right now, including the companies, right? We see Zoom, there's a new security thing coming out every day with them. Now, the really interesting thing with that is that, yeah, basically Zoom is getting a massive amount of free testing, right? To see, and it's almost like an open source code review at this point because of the flaws that have been found. But because of that, Zoom's return time on fixing these flaws is, I'd say, within 24 hours for a lot of them. It's really amazing to see this kind of like give and take where Zoom's like, and of course, Zoom has been incredibly benevolent, right? They're like, hey, you guys want to talk to your family members? We'll give our platform out for free for the next couple of months there's some stipulations there, right? It's like 40-minute call or whatever, but it still is a way for you to connect to somebody on the other side of the world or on the other side of the street, right? That's how it is nowadays. So we don't want to lambast Zoom too much for their lack of cybersecurity. And I think they've come out and said, hey, you know, this is a really complex system and a really complex, you know, there's going to be bugs. Some of them are going to be security issues. But at the end of the day, you know, we're going to turn around and fix them as quickly as we can. And they have been. And I think there's other, you know, entities that I'm not talking about out there that are doing the same thing. You know, going back to it, we are stress testing this virtual world that we've all created, you know, that we've all put all this time and effort into. And so we're stress testing it. We're security testing it. And things are getting fixed and things are getting faster. And I think, and this is just a prediction as the futurist, right? I think that once we all return back to work, there's going to be a lot of companies who are like, you really saved a lot of money doing that via blank, right? Via utilities or, you know, whatever it is. Or, hey, you know what? Our workers actually got a little bit more work done when they were, you know, working remotely. Whatever it is, I think we're going to see an upsurge in remote work. Of course, that comes with responsibility on the IT side and the security side, too.
I think you hit a big nail on the head there, especially with what I'm seeing here. Ever since we did remote work, I've noticed that more people are interacting. There's just more work, I feel like, happening all the time. Yep. And it's interesting, right? I mean, I like it because I feel like, especially for Dustin and I, who have been remote workers for a while, it's like, yes, welcome. You'll be doing a lot because you'll realize you have the availability now. And it's pretty unique. And organizations can save a ton of money too, whether, as Dustin said, it's utilities, keeping the lights on or off. What's interesting, I'm glad you brought up Zoom, because my wife is a school teacher here in Maryland. And one of the things that happened was they were trying to identify what mechanism to use in order to train students remotely, to teach students remotely. And I really enjoyed kind of why I think schools are a great case study. Someone out there is going to do a great case study on how all these different schools reacted differently in the future and identify like key traits. So soon you'll have schools that have continuity of operations plans that include pandemic planning, right? And what happened with the schools was some of them, some districts, right, took the arrival of technology and embraced it and took it seriously. And you saw it as the enhancing capability that it was. And these systems didn't have too much of a issue pivoting into this new experience, whereas then they handed out the Chromebooks and everything to kids and they did practice drills and so forth a week before they thought they may have to go teach remotely and so forth. But then you had other school systems who just were completely flat-footed. And I think it's interesting because it's very similar to companies in that regard. You have companies that embrace technology. Isaka, for example, did a really great job of pivoting. One day there was an announcement that we'd be working remotely and so forth, and everyone pretty much came online very smoothly.
Yep, agreed.
And exactly.
Our IT department might have something different to say about that, but it seemed very seamless.
Yes, if there were issues, we didn't see them. So great job, right. IT.
Yeah, the IT department is amazing.
So other organizations, though, like some of these schools just were, you see this a lot in cybersecurity, right? You have this whole mentality of it hasn't happened yet, so I'm not concerned, right? It hasn't happened, so I must be doing something right. Everything's fine. Everything's working out okay, or we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, which is really not a good idea when you're talking about cybersecurity or you're talking about big changes like this. So you had a few schools that are still just now barely getting online with instructing for students. Organizations that were ready for this were able to transition really well, but organizations that weren't had serious issues. And it comes down to that whole mentality of what we've discussed a lot here at ISOC, and Dustin and I have discussed cyber maturity, right? Cyber maturity organizations that were more mature and had tried to identify what the risks were in their daily operations and so forth really stood a better chance of pivoting with this situation. Because the whole process of becoming cyber mature requires that you consider worst case scenarios, identifying what are my susceptibilities, what are concerns I should have. If something like this happens, how damaging would it be? Now, this is kind of old hat for me and Dustin because our previous lives, we worked with the intelligence community. So we had to consider risk and damage and likelihood and so forth all the time.
All the time.
But that was a happy sigh, right? But with companies and with organizations, right, that take this idea that it hasn't happened and everything's fine, and unless they were required to meet some kind of compliance statute, then they didn't really care. And then they kind of got stuck. Even ones that did have to meet compliance statutes, they then realized they didn't. So it comes down to making sure you do that regular kind of checkup, tune-up assessment, and measure your cyber maturity. And case in point, we have organizations. Isaka, through our CMMI arm, has the CMMI Cyber Maturity Platform. And that tool is pretty helpful for organizations who want to become cyber mature. It helps them assess themselves, apply controls and all that stuff. What's interesting is all the people I've talked to that have used that or have used some other capability to measure maturity, they have had this near seamless transition. You're not seeing them in the news, right? You're not seeing them in the news going, oh, and then they had this problem. And the attackers, the hackers are loving this, by the way. It's a field day out there. They're trying. Dustin, the COVID one, right? Where they're putting up fake COVID help ads and so forth, and they're exploiting you that way. So it's a great time to be alive if you want to be a miscreant, right?
Yeah, actually, the quick YouTube video that I did was on basically setting up, you know, Security Onion on your own home network, right? And seeing what trips the IDS. And one of the things that got tripped on my network was a fake COVID advertisement. And I was like, what's going on here? And I you know, did some digging. I did some incident response within my own house. And figured out that my wife had gone to a website, a legitimate healthcare website. And on that website, there was an ad that was a fake COVID-19, either was for a cure or for, a news or something that was, it was fake. And Security and Snort had actually picked it up. So it was a really interesting find.
And what's interesting is COVID has provided these opportunities for these hackers. So it has become more dangerous to be online, too, because if you think about it, if you're an attacker, right, if you're a hacker, all of a sudden, look at all these other people on the Internet. Great. These are more opportunities for me to hack them. Oh, yeah. And
more endpoints, right? Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. And Dustin has a different computer than I do. I mean, you guys have different computers than we do. And by the way, you can still have a secure, mature setup, which Isaka has because they take that in consideration in their policy. I wouldn't be saying otherwise unless it weren't true. What is interesting is we have specific policies that are applied no matter what type of system you use. A lot of companies don't have those, right? A lot of companies say, well, you either use box X or use whatever you want to. And then they don't plan for whatever you want to. So unless they go through some kind of process with cyber maturity, right, there's a much greater chance that this transition is not going to go well. And you could just be operating online, or your people could be operating online with no protection mechanisms in place, no security controls. So, yeah, it's been really interesting. It's been super interesting. I'm looking forward to the analysis that's eventually going to come. Who was more susceptible, a Mac or a PC? During this time, right?
I don't want to know, because I think that then that gives people a false sense of security. Like, well, okay, the Macs were the least likely.
I know.
You know, like, I'm just going to get a Mac and then I'll be safe from everything. It's like, that's not how that works.
That's not how that works. You know what? We're both wrong. It's probably going to be Android.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Android. Yeah. Was like, man, for some reason, Android was the most secure platform out there that everybody was using.
Like, there's some specific build that only 5% of Android users use, but they were like, yeah, well, it was really secure.
Right. It's like, you cool. know, and another interesting thing that we do see happening, at least here in the United States, is a relaxation of some of the privacy standards that we have. For example, HIPAA. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but reading directly off the HHS website, it basically says, look, we don't want everybody going into the emergency room, or you're going to see their doctor. If you just have a regular checkup with your doctor, you can do it online. And it doesn't have to be a platform that's necessarily HIPAA certified, right? And basically what they're saying is, if there's a HIPAA violation for using an online platform that's not HIPAA certified, we're just going to kind of look the other way. for the next couple of months, as long as the intent was good, as long as it wasn't a doctor who was maliciously, a healthcare worker who was maliciously trying to leak your information, which I don't know, I've never heard of that before, but maybe it's a thing.
Well, that's so stressful.
Right? So, and you see these doctors using platforms like Zoom. Now, I did give Zoom a lot of credit a second ago and said, hey, you know, they're working on it, and they are, but they're not HIPAA compliant. You know, there still are vulnerabilities out there. So as you're out there in your daily lives and you are doing things, yeah, it's okay to kind of, I don't want to say relax your security standards a little bit, but just be cognizant if you are going to relax your security standards of what you're talking about and what type of information you're passing, you know, back and forth.
I couldn't agree more, because especially now I feel like people have this, oh, well, it's online. We're online. I just have to make sure data gets to where it is. These are trying times and so forth. And don't get me wrong, they are trying times.
Yes.
But just because things are non-traditional and it's a bit more stressful, I get a little concerned when I see shortcuts being taken. Dustin, you know what it is. You're going to see a lot more pocket skiffs. That's exactly what you're going to see. And for those of you
that haven't heard in a long time,
a skiff is a secure compartmented information facility. This is used to hold classified information, sensitive information, etc. And what a pocket skiff is when you are working in that field of intelligence or, you know, confidential information, etc., and you have an individual who doesn't want to take the time to get the appropriate transport mechanisms in place, such as the dual bag system with the multiple locks and so forth, and they decide to just put important and or classified information in their pocket and walk it to whatever destination they are going to. Now, this is an incredible violation of security, right?
Yes.
Like, this is bad news there.
If you're in the intelligence community, you've never heard that term before, don't do it. It's not legal.
We've seen people get in a lot of trouble for doing that. But what it was is it always would happen in specific places such as war zones and so forth. I saw the uptick of that kind of thing in Afghanistan specifically because it felt like, well, we're in a stressful area and so forth. And this is non-traditional, so this must be okay. When, right. No, it's still not okay to do that.
It's still not.
I understand. Okay. It's stressful. And talk about, you know, working from home, you've got the little foot sounds that are going above my head. Those are my kids. It's still a stressful time. Yes, I understand. We are in Bagram or Kabul, but that doesn't mean you should take classified information and not protect it in your efforts to transport it from one location to another. So,
right. That's literally your job. And that's another thing to hit on here, too, is that most of the people who are going to be listening to this security podcast are probably security professionals. Right. And we more than ever need to remain vigilant, and not only vigilant, but also proactively educational for our peers and our colleagues. Right. We need to make sure that everybody is staying safe out. Again, we've created this great virtual world that we're now all, you know, able to work and, you know, somewhat and even play in. Right. We're having online happy hours and all kind of, and, you know,
Which are kind of fun.
Yeah, we're able to see, you know, the grandkids are able to see grandma. Like, it's all good things, right? It's the same thing as the physical world, right? We still have to remain a little bit vigilant. I'm not trying to scare anybody. I'm not trying to say, you got to make sure that nobody, you know, nobody's on your network or that, you know, nobody's waiting outside your house trying to hack into your Wi-Fi. I don't know if anybody's actually going to be doing that, right? I think the attack surface for everything just grew exponentially overnight. So I don't think there's going to be any physical or proximal access issues. But
he said before looking out the window.
Right. Yeah. And I did just look out my window. Yes. Thank you. I am paranoid, but I think it's important to again, remain vigilant and maybe a little bit more than usual. Yes, if we can, if we're not already, you know, at the edge of on the last straw, like ready to pull our hair out, being cooped up inside, being cooped up within a, you know, a block radius or however far you're allowed to walk or go outside, you know, if you can spend just a little bit more energy and being a little bit more vigilant, I think it'll go a long way. And also making sure that your colleagues are doing the same.
So if we can just kind of fast forward, let's pretend we're past this and we're all back to normal and people are in the office again. What are some of the metrics or some of the measures that the security teams can look at to see here's what we did well, here's what we can improve on? And I guess, what can organizations look to evaluate how successful this potential, you know, entire remote workforce experiment has gone?
The way to do it is you need to really take a methodical approach, assess yourself, see what risks you have, like build a risk portfolio profile, right? Assess where you need to really beef up your capabilities. Now, when I say this, specifically when it comes to things like this pandemic and so forth, there are a lot of things you need to consider that are unique to this, such as remote work, such as connectivity and so forth. But a lot of those, I'll say, variables are taken into account in a lot of the other more traditional types of incidents, such as cybercrime, such as denial of services attacks, such as, you know, insider threats and external threats and so forth. So a lot of these models that are out there are very applicable. I mentioned a little bit earlier, we have the CMMI Cyber Maturity Platform. That tool can really help an organization assess themselves to prepare for not just your traditional, oh, I'm afraid of ransomware kind of thing, but takes a holistic look at the whole organization to identify where are they strong, where are they weak, and where do they need to spend a little more time. Now, that tool is really helpful and it's really great. There are other options out there too. Anything that can help you take a holistic look at yourself, anytime you can perform an assessment, whether you are using the CMMI Cyber Maturity Platform to assess yourself or whether you have an assessor come and assess you, these are the types of things that help get you ready for nearly any, because we'll be legal here, right? And say not any, but nearly any potential incident that may come. Case in point, as I mentioned earlier, organizations that took a holistic look at themselves and their risk levels and then became more mature based upon their assessment of themselves have weathered this storm well. Right? The financial organizations that had plans in place for remote workers, organizations like Isaka who were able to pivot quickly, all of these are organizations that either through compliance requirements or from risk concerns have taken the time to assess themselves and say, what do I need to do in order to be ready? What do I need to do in order to be prepared? And then they've acted on that. And I think that is what I would recommend to all of these organizations. And you can start now. Just because this isn't over doesn't mean you have to wait till it's done in order to thoroughly assess yourself.
Right. We're in the middle of a real tabletop, right?
Right. We really are. This is a real tabletop.
I guess it's not a tabletop, then. It's an actual, here we are, you know, executing our business continuity plans. And you hit the nail on the head, Frank. How quickly, like, I think that's the biggest one, Sofi, is how quickly was your organization able to pivot? And, you know, was it seamless? Was it not seamless? Why wasn't it seamless? You know, because what we've basically gone through at this point is what happens if the office isn't there, right? Well, that's crazy. That's never going to happen. Well, guess what? The office isn't there right now. I mean, physically, right. Yeah.
It's there, but don't go in.
Right. It's physically there. You can't go in. You can't be, you know, depending on where you live, you're not supposed to go in anyways. You're not supposed to be around, you know, other people within 6 feet. But now here we are. You know, here it is. Okay. Do we have enough off-prem utilities to be able to do this? Do we have enough stuff in the cloud? Is our on-prem stuff available somehow via VPN, via, you know, some other means? How do we do this? How do we react when we're in a crisis? Right now, we're in a crisis. The whole world is in a crisis right now. And there's no better time than to, once this whole thing is over and we can all get back into the office, or maybe not, right? Maybe some of us stay out of the office, or, you know, however we do it. But when we are able to do, the best word I can think of it for Frank is a hot wash. But for those of you in the military, I think you know what that means. But basically, after action report. Yep. Hot wash, whatever you want to call it. And we can look at, like, okay, here's the data. Here's how quickly we were able to pivot. Why weren't we able to pivot faster? Or we did a good job with that. Moving on, you know, what utilities were we able to use? What functionality did we lose? Why did we lose it? Those are the kind of metrics that I think you're going to want to look at in order to be better prepared for next time. And I'm not saying that there's going to be necessarily this might not be a pandemic that happens next time. It might be a natural disaster, another natural disaster, such as, you know, a storm or a flood or who knows. But these things happen. And that's why we have business continuity. And that's why we have disaster recovery. And that's why we have all these great, you know, plans that we're supposed to be implementing. And if we're not, then guess what? We just learned a really, really hard but valuable lesson.
Thanks, Frank and Dustin. And that's all we have time for in this episode of the podcast. But if you're interested in hearing Frank and Dustin's monthly podcast, be sure to subscribe. And if you're a regular listener, please be sure to check out our show notes, which contain a link to a brief survey in which you can share your thoughts on how we can improve the podcast.